It's the morning show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kant. Hank Aaron turned 41 years old in 1975, just before starting the first of his final two seasons as a baseball player in Milwaukee. He made history when he surpassed Babe Ruth to set a home run record that would stand for more than three decades. But on the way to beating Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron was also forced to beat hate, as mail from angry fans poured into the baseball club and the FBI investigated death threats against him. Through it all, he maintained his dignity and he found a voice to fight for racial equality, inspiring fans and athletes for generations. Join in this discussion on the life and lasting legacy of Hank Aaron, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terrence Moore is the author of The Real Hank Aaron, an intimate look at the life and legacy of the home run king. Terrence, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, it's great to be here.
What a great book. It's so enjoyable. You had quite a relationship with him, and you talked about how he influenced you. What was it like to write this?
Well, you know, I tell you, I was destined to write this, Shereen, because I went from a 12-year-old baseball fan, Hank Aaron fan, and I bought this poster at 12 years old in 1968. I'm looking at it right now in my room. It's in perfect condition after all these years. So I went from that to being an honorary pallbearer at his funeral in January of 2021. And this book is essentially about everything in between there, where we developed this great friendship and relationship over 40 years. I was closer to Hank than any reporter in history, and that led to the writing of this book.
Talk a little bit about that friendship. How did it develop over the years? How did you get so close?
You know, and that's an interesting question because, you know, Hank was a private person, and being a spiritual person, which I am, I believe everything is meant to be, and I go back to that poster again as the first sign of that, but it essentially started in 1982 when I worked for the San Francisco Examiner, and I did this detailed study of what was happening to African Americans in baseball, and it was a prolific piece and a prophetic piece, because what I discovered was, and again in 1982, that there was this steady drop of African Americans from its peak in the mid-1970s of 25% down to 19% in 1982, and of course it's below 10% now. And the general consensus from the people I talked to, players, coaches, and administrators, white and black, and on the record, was Major League Baseball had a quota system and was phasing out African Americans. And in 1982, Hank Aaron was the only African American in a front office at the time in Major League Baseball when he was with the Atlanta Braves. And this was after he finished his 23-year Major League playing career, 21 with the Milwaukee Braves and Atlanta Braves, and the last two, of course, there in Milwaukee with the Brewers. So in 1976, he became an executive with the Braves. So he was the only black executive at the time. Called him up in 82. We clicked from day one, and we could talk in more detail about this. But one of the things that became very apparent, it was as if I knew Hank Aaron all my life, because he felt like a family member. He felt like my Uncle Virgil, or even at one point about 10 or 15 years ago, I'm talking to my mom. She says, you know, Hank Aaron has some of the same mannerisms as your dad. So it just became a very comfortable thing.
We're talking about the life of Hank Aaron with Terrence Moore, the author of the new book, The Real Hank Aaron. Is he the greatest baseball player of all time?
Oh, clearly. And, you know, and granted, I'm biased, but I make a case for this in chapter two of the book, and patting myself on the back. I think it's a for sure way to look at it. And we'll just make this real simple. The only people who are in contention for the greatest player of all time are Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Willie Mays. Babe Ruth is out of the picture because anything prior to April 15th, 1947, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, doesn't count, because that means that Babe Ruth didn't play the best available competition because he was just playing against white players. Then you come down to Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. Hank Aaron beats Willie Mays in just about every single offensive category. Now, home runs, batting average, running down the lines. Then people will say, well, what about stolen bases? Well, there was always this misconception that Hank Aaron was not that great of a base stealer when compared to Willie Mays. But I looked this up. They both stole bases at exactly the same rate, 77%. Then the only other thing that people might quiver over between that, between Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, is fielding wise. Hank Aaron had 3 gold gloves, right field, and Willie Mays ended up with 12, 14, something like that in center field. But that was because Willie Mays played the glamour position that was center field, and he played it basically in New York. We got a lot of visibility. Hank Aaron was a tremendous fielder. So when you add all those things together, along with the fact that here he is, you know, he's been dead since 2021. He hasn't played since 1976, and he still holds a major league record for extra bases and total bases.
You and Hank Aaron bonded over your mutual admiration for Jackie Robinson. How did you and Aaron see similarities between your lives and the life that Robinson led?
You know, and that's a great question. And that is a running theme throughout this book, the symmetry between the three of us. And I'll start with Jackie Robinson I deal with Jackie Robinson an awful lot in this book because people don't understand that Jackie Robinson was bigger outside of baseball than he was inside of baseball. I mean, I should say bigger as far as that guy that broke the color barrier. He breaks the color barrier again, April 15th, 1947. He spends a decade with the Brooklyn Dodgers, but it was his life afterwards that was even bigger than that. I mean, he was, for want of a better term, LeBron James before LeBron James. You know, this professional athlete that was really huge when it came to social issues. And again, and this was even before Muhammad Ali. And he had critics, both black and white, because he was an equal opportunity guy when it came to that type of subject. He marched with Dr. King. It was there in 1963 at the March on Washington. And I point all that out because Jackie Robinson was Hank's idol. And when people hear that, they think from a baseball sense, yes, but also from the sense of everything I just said. And it got to the plate, Shereen, that in October of 1972, when Jackie Robinson died, Hank Aaron went to Willie Mays and Ernie Banks, two of the most prominent black players of that time with Hank, and said that now that Jackie has died, it's up to us to take over his legacy when it comes to social issues and what have you. And both Ernie Banks and Willie Mays, and this is what Hank told me, said that they didn't want to be involved because they didn't want their images affected by this, you know, by being associated with these causes. And Hank's response, and this is very telling, he said, I'll do it myself. And he just went about his business. And then the third part of that, where it comes to me, and this also goes back to your original question, or one of them, about why he and I, Hank Aaron, bonded. In so many ways, I am the Jackie Robinson of black sports writers. I was the first black sports writer in the history of the Cincinnati Enquirer, only the second black ever to write for the Cincinnati Enquirer. First black sports writer in the history of the San Francisco Examiner. First black sports columnist in the history of the Deep South when I went to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for 25 years. And I say columnist, for people who don't know, that means I was the first black sports writer allowed to give his opinion in the South. And there was horror stories involved with that. First black ever to cover a National Football League team on a regular basis for a major metropolitan newspaper. And I covered the Oakland Raiders. I'm the longest running African-American ever to vote for Baseball Hall of Famers, and only the second in history. And I can go on and on. And that was part of the bond between Hank and myself, and also the trials and tribulations I went through being all the things I just mentioned, he could relate to me and I could relate to him.
So a lot of parallels there. Terrence Moore, the author of the book, The Real Hank Aaron, we'll talk more with him after this break. Join in this discussion, 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. Hank Aaron was a legend, both on and off the baseball field, known as the man who broke Babe Ruth's home run record. He will also be remembered as a man who inspired a generation with unending courage and strong community ties. Join in on what Hank Aaron's accomplishments meant for fans and athletes, both then and now, what they meant to you. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terrence Moore is the author of the book The Real Hank Aaron, which is about his relationship with perhaps the greatest baseball player of all time. When Hank Aaron was pursuing Babe Ruth's career home run record, he faced significant challenges. Baseball fans sent hate mail to him. He received death threats. How did he handle that kind of reaction?
Yeah, you know, when I'm asked these questions, what I always try to do is tell people what they don't know. And I should add this real quick, that 95% of this book is stuff that's never been said before or known before about Hank Aaron. And I'm going to answer that question by saying this also, how the book came about. It was the summer of 2020, and this was right before Hank Aaron died, of course, in January of 2021. And I'm talking to Hank, and I was just saying, you know, Hank, out of all the books that have been written about you, all the documentaries, all the magazine articles, people still don't know the real Hank Aaron. That's the title. And he was saying, yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, I do all these stories and what have you. As a matter of fact, I even start saving interviews with Hank from the early 1990s. Like most of us sports writers will, record somebody and just erase over it and move on to like the next thing. And I started saving these things. And as a matter of fact, I'm turning them into NFTs. And for people who don't know, they can Google, and they're basically sound bites you can buy and own pieces of history. So anyway, it's a lot of unique things. And one of the things that I talk about is this Babe Ruth chase, things that nobody knew about. Let me add this too real quick. Out of the hundreds of times I talked to Hank Aaron, we're talking about hundreds of times, not thousands of times, there was almost never a time when he did not, every single time just about that I talked to Hank Aaron, he told me something he never said before. And in regards to the Babe Ruth chase, he was telling me about how he looked at that time period as something that affected him for the rest of his life, because people did not understand that there were days when he could have starved to death, because he said that he couldn't leave the hotel room, go out to get a bite to eat. So his teammates had to bring food to him in his hotel because he was so terrified leaving the hotel room that something bad might happen. That had never been said before. He talked about how he was more concerned with his younger teammates, particularly Ralph Garr and Dusty Baker, the two African-American players on the team who idolized Hank Aaron, that he was afraid that if they were near him, that somebody might take a shot at aim for him and hit them. This was all new. I had never heard that before. And something that he had told me through the years. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting was in our last interview, which is also in the book, where this was in the fall of 2020, he was saying that he just basically resented the fact that white superstars such as Pete Rose and Cal Ripken Jr. and Mark McGwire could chase these historic Major League Baseball records, and in his words, go basically unmolested along the way, whereas Hank Aaron in the early 70s, when he was chasing Babe Ruth, went through, as he said, a quote at the time, just holy hell. And I just thought that was fascinating. And the other piece of this is, which I bring out throughout the book, Hank Aaron was eternally haunted by that Babe Ruth chase, about what he had to go through, about the death threats, about the hate mail, what have you. It never left him until the day he died. And that was part of the reason when Barry Bonds in 2007 went on his home run chase to catch Babe Ruth's record 755 career home runs and passing it. That's part of the reason, and a large part of the reason, why Hank Aaron refused to comment on that entire race, except to me. I was the only person who would talk to about that, because the just talking about it brought back the bad memories of what took place in the early 70s.
We're talking about baseball legend Hank Aaron with Terrence Moore, author of the new biography, The Real Hank Aaron. You bring up Barry Bonds. While playing for the San Francisco Giants, Bonds broke the record. He went on to hit 762 home runs. Bonds is accused of using performance-enhancing drugs during that time. So how did Hank Aaron talk about that and that issue when this subject came up with you?
Shereen, this gets very interesting, and this is kind of a two-parter. In the beginning, Hank really, I wouldn't say dismissed it, but it was a non-factor to him. Later in his life, it kind of evolved to where it really bothered him that guys, not just Barry Bonds, but that guys were using, performance-enhancing drugs to break records and just to be a good to great players. Now, Barry Bonds in particular, and I should say this too, Hank was very proud of that record, 755 career home runs when he held the record, and Babe Ruth had 714. He was very proud of the record, but he wasn't obsessed with the record. And I always like to get that out of the way. He didn't care if Barry Bonds broke the record or Ken Griffey Jr. or the man on the moon. He didn't really care about the record. So that you know, in that sense. The second thing is about Barry Bonds. He didn't have much of a problem in the beginning with Barry Bonds, the player, and this ties into steroids. Hank told me many times before, during that time period and afterwards, that until and unless Barry Bonds confessed that he used steroids on purpose to hit home runs or to just be a great player in general, Hank Aaron was willing to give Barry Bonds the benefit of the doubt. And for those who don't know, to this day, Barry Bonds has never admitted to using performance-enhancing drugs on purpose. He said he accidentally did. He always said that he didn't know he was using them, and he didn't certainly use them on purpose to hit home runs. So that was that part one. Barry Bonds, the person, totally different story. Hank did not care for Barry Bonds, the person. And a lot of that makes sense because they were just two different people. Hank Aaron, if you've met him, he would be like your best friend. I mean, he never met a stranger. He's just the friendliest superstar you ever want to meet. Barry Bonds, not so much. And the ironic thing is, I got along as well with Barry Bonds as any player, any reporter in history. Barry Bonds was not the most pleasant person to deal with for the most part. So you had that going on. And it's to the point, and Serene, I'm sure you read this in the book, I pointed out a specific episode where this kind of played to its hilt about Hank's dislike for Barry the person. In 2002, there's this very famous Super Bowl commercial that involved Barry Bonds and Hank Aaron and for those of you who don't know about this commercial, Google it. It's worth watching. It's a great commercial. Hank told me, he called me up a few months before that commercial, and he said he wasn't going to do it. And then I asked him why, and he says, well, because the other guy is involved. He didn't want anything to do with Barry Bonds. And then a few days after that, he calls me back and said, well, I decided to do the commercial because they guaranteed me that I would not have to be anywhere near him at any time. So they do this great commercial, and when you watch it, you can't tell, but Hank Aaron is in a whole different area and filming his part at a whole different time than Barry Bonds. But that's a long-winded way to just kind of give you the overall view of Hank and steroids and Barry Bonds.
Just very briefly, do you think the record is still Hank Aaron's?
No doubt. No doubt about it. He's a legitimate home run king.
With us for the rest of the hour is Terrence Moore. He is a national sports journalist, a columnist, and the author of a new book called The Real Hank Aaron. We'll talk with him more about Hank Aaron's legacy and life and his memories of Hank Aaron. You can join in this conversation with your memories and thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. News Update is next on the Ideas Network. The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent, continuing our discussion on Hank Aaron's life, his career, and his courage in the face of racial tension in Milwaukee and around the country. Join in with your memories of Hank Aaron and the ways in which he transformed baseball and professional sports during his lifetime. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Terrence Moore is the author of the new book, The Real Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron started his professional baseball career in 1952 with the Eau Claire Bears. This was a team that was a Boston Braves farm team. Did he share any memories about that with you, about playing in Eau Claire?
Oh, my goodness gracious. I want to tell you something. Hank Aaron loved Eau Claire, and Hank Aaron loved Milwaukee, and Hank Aaron loved Wisconsin. I mean, whenever you mention anything about any of the three, his eyes would just light up, and again, you know, this bond that he and I had. Another part of that bond was one of the cities that we lived in when we were growing up. My two brothers and I, and my parents, was Milwaukee, and my dad was an AT&T supervisor, so he got transferred around the Midwest, and grew up in South Bend, Indiana. He got transferred to Cincinnati, and then to Chicago, and then to Milwaukee in '72. And so we were there when Hank Aaron came back and finished his career with the Brewers in 75 or 76. But it was just so striking to me when we moved to Milwaukee was how much people in Wisconsin loved Hank Aaron. That was in 72 when we were there. And then when I got a chance to know Hank, I saw that the feeling was mutual. But Eau Claire, I mean, he just loved his time there. And obviously Eau Claire loved Hank Aaron because they built a statue of him there. You know, yes. You got one there, which is amazing, you know, and you got one at in Milwaukee too. So yeah, he just fond memories and he used to talk about how well he was treated by the people. And just think about this, you know, a black man, even in Wisconsin in the early 50s, you know, and coming up there, a black man from the South, that could be very intimidating. And for him to speak so fondly about Eau Claire and just Wisconsin in general during those times tells you an awful lot.
As you said, you were living in Milwaukee when Aaron broke Babe Ruth's home run record in Atlanta in 1974. What do you remember about how Milwaukee baseball fans reacted to that historic moment?
Oh, well, you know, in 74, now that was interesting because being African-American and, you know, my mom and dad and two younger brothers, yeah, and I grew up in a sports family. You know, all the parents, everybody, we were all just diehard sports fans. You know, South Bend, Notre Dame football games, you know, Cincinnati, Reds, Bengals, and everything else. And of course, in Milwaukee, we became all things Milwaukee soon after we came there in 72. So here it is in April 8th, 1974, time for Hank Aaron to break the record. You know, he broke the record at Atlanta Fulton County Stadium against the L.A. Dodgers, and this is an interesting story, Shereen. I think you saw it in the book. You know, so we're there in Milwaukee, north side of Milwaukee, the family, waiting for this moment all day, and so we're downstairs in the family room getting ready to watch this thing, and our color television set went out. Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, you know, this great right? event. And so we all rushed upstairs, and we had this black and white TV that's real small. So we're all gathered in the kitchen watching this thing. And from an African-American standpoint, it had to be very similar to African-Americans and everybody else for that matter, but I just say African-Americans, gathered around the radio on April 15, 1947, listening to Jackie Robinson break a color barrier. This is the same sense that we had the Moore family gather around that black and white television up in the kitchen in Milwaukee, watching him break Babe Ruth record. That was just, that's one of the most cherished moments of my youth.
We're talking about baseball great Hank Aaron with author Terrence Moore. Joe from Star Lake was on the phone, couldn't stay. He said he grew up in the 50s, big baseball fan, and he wants you to talk a little bit about the psychological impact it had on children. To see people of color playing the game, kids would imagine themselves as the athletes. And what do you say about that?
Oh, it had a great influence on me and my brothers. We were diehard baseball. We're diehard sports fans, but we certainly were diehard baseball fans. And just kind of give you an example of how that worked, what Joe was alluding to. When we moved to Milwaukee, or to Cincinnati, like I said, I grew up in four different cities, basically, and was born and raised in South Bend. And we moved to Cincinnati in 1968. And that was the start of the Big Red Machine. Some people may remember that. Greatest team of all time. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And in the 70s, Reds won more games than anybody in the history of Major League Baseball, two world championships in 75 and 76. And the reason I bring this up, and this is something that Hank used to laugh about all the time, but we were talking about, again, going back to how Major League Baseball, in the minds of many in the early 80s, black players, white players, and executives thought Major League Baseball was phasing out African-Americans. And one of the reasons they gave was they felt the people who believe that and still believe it is that baseball thought that African-Americans were becoming too dominant. And that ties into the Big Red Machine that people may have heard about. The Big Red Machine, in many ways, as I point out in my book, could have been the Big Black Machine. Because, again, here's this dominant team in the 70s, and the only two white starters on that team were Pete Rose and Johnny Bench. That was it. And I'm sure that led to a lot of African-Americans like myself and my brothers who, and not to say that was a big part of it, but we saw a lot of guys who looked like us on that team. And that inspired us to play baseball and to love baseball through the years.
Hank Aaron nearly retired before requesting a transfer to finish his career in Milwaukee. He was close to being traded to the Boston Red Sox. Tell us about that. What happened?
You know, again, this is one of these things. I got all of these tapes and of recorded conversations of Hank Aaron from the early 1990s. Among other things, I'm also a visiting professor of journalism at Miami, Ohio. And I always tell my students, do more listening than talking in interviews. And I thought I was pretty good at that. But when I was listening to these tapes, preparing for this book, I kept hearing things that I never heard the first time around talking to Hank Aaron. And one of which was, when I'm going through my back tapes, was what you're talking about here, Shireen, about everything that went around his leaving Atlanta, coming to Milwaukee. And there were two huge chunks that I missed that are in the book that's never been said before. One was in 1974, April 8th, 1974, after Hank Aaron breaks Babe Ruth's record in Atlanta Fulton County Stadium against the Dodgers. Hank told me that he wanted to retire right then. And that's never been reported before. I mean, he said he was done. He was just emotionally spent. And then he said that the next thing he wanted to do was he wanted to, that at the end of that 74 season with the Braves, he wanted to retire with the Braves after the season. But he said that negotiations broke down because the Braves did not give him what he wanted as far as a front office position. They wanted him to be more of a figurehead. He didn't want to do that. That was another revelation. And another revelation was he just kind of slid in a conversation as I'm listening to my tape and recording of this. I'm just doing, I'm like, my mouth is wide open. He said that everybody just assumed that the Brewers were the only team that he could go to or were thinking about. And he said he also had an opportunity to go to the Boston Red Sox. And just think about that. I mean, Hank Aaron finishing his career aiming at the Green Monster, you know, Fenway Park and that sort of thing. And I was listening to the tape, and I was kicking myself, thinking to myself, why didn't I ask him more about that? Because I just missed it. And then the other part that I missed, he was saying that, and this pertains to Milwaukee, he said that one of the greatest things that happened to him in his life was finishing his career with the Brewers. And that part I think people can understand given what I said about his love affair with Wisconsin-Milwaukee. But again, here's the part that I missed. He said that the reason that was so great in part was the Milwaukee Brewers trained in Sun City, Arizona, a retirement home. And he said that at that point, he just wanted to be done with baseball. He said that it was great because he said it was just a bunch of old people. And they didn't bother you. He said he just go home to his apartment and just relax and not be bothered by anybody.
We have Lanny from Iron River on the phone. Hi, Lanny.
Well, hello. How are you guys?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I kind of have a lot in common with the guy talking right now because I grew up in Cincinnati, and he's completely right. I mean, I'm 71 years old. The Red Machine was nothing but hot. There was only two white players, Pete Rose and Johnny Bench. So, and now I moved to Wisconsin because I love Wisconsin. So I'm getting a kick out of the conversation we're having right now. It's great. It's great. It's great.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the phone call. I have to wonder how important it was to Milwaukee baseball fans that one of the greatest baseball players ended his professional career in the city. How important is it now to Milwaukee baseball fans?
You know, that's kind of a mix. I got a mixed answer with that, and just to be honest with you. From a historic standpoint, obviously it was huge to bring it full circle. Because, again, when we moved to Milwaukee in 72, I should say prior to that, I did not realize how important Hank Aaron was to Milwaukee. I don't know what it is right now, but I know when we lived there, my parents lived there for 33 years after we moved there in 72. But at the time, I would dare say that the most famous sports figure in history of Wisconsin was Vince Lombardi, and then maybe Hank Aaron and Bart Starr won 2B and 2A, something like that. But anyway, so from a historical standpoint, it was huge. I mean, because I just remember how big it was and what a big deal it was when he came back. But here's where I got mixed feelings. Being a baseball fan and being a guy who used to watch Hank Aaron. Like I said, we moved to Cincinnati in 68, watching Hank Aaron at Old Crosley Field in Cincinnati in his prime, and then at Riverfront Stadium. As a matter of fact, he hit the first home run ever at Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. And he's got a lot of Cincinnati connections, by the way. First game against the Cincinnati Reds, hit the 714, to tie Babe Ruth in Cincinnati, hit his 3,000th hit in Cincinnati. So that's the Hank Aaron that I remember. So when my brothers and I would go to County Stadium and see the other Hank Aaron, the one that finished his career in baseball career in Milwaukee in 75 and 76, that wasn't the same Hank Aaron. I mean, he was way past his prime. And matter of fact, he told Bud Selig, the Brewers owner, he said, that, hey, you're not getting the same player. And Bud Selig said, I know. But it was very painful to watch, and he's in those awful Brewer uniforms of the time. I mean, it was just, oh, my God. It was just very, very hard.
I know those uniforms. Terrence Moore has been a sports reporter and columnist for 40 years. We'll talk more with him about his relationship with baseball legend Hank Aaron after this break. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seewert. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward. We continue now with our conversation about baseball great Hank Aaron, the Milwaukee right fielder who shattered records and stereotypes during his life and career. Join in to discuss one of the greatest Major League Baseball players of all time, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Terrence Moore is the author of The Real Hank Aaron, an intimate look at the life and legacy of the home run king. Hank Aaron told you that he believed the talent level of professional baseball players was significantly greater after the sport was racially integrated. He argued that as the talent pool increased, competition for team positions increased. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and, you know, and this kind of ties into what I said at the top of the conversation and what I alluded to earlier. That is why, again, a lot of people believed in the early 80s when I did the deep research into what was going on with African-Americans in baseball. Again, in 1982, it was down to 19% African-Americans, and now it's less than 10% now. And then the high was 26% in the mid-1970s. And the feeling was that Major League Baseball just thought that African-Americans were becoming too dominant, and because African-Americans were rising fast in the sport soon after Jack Robinson broke the color barrier on April 15, 1947. And let me walk you through this. Right after Jack had broke the color barrier, and this, and here's something else that Hank and I talked about. Hank was used to get this animated talking about this, about how people got it all wrong. They always said that that Jackie Robinson proved that African-Americans could play baseball. No, baseball people already knew that African-Americans could play. The thing with Major League Baseball was they were afraid they could play and dominate. They knew they could play because of the Negro League. And you look at what happened after Jackie Robinson breaks the color barrier. Immediately, you have black players winning MVP awards, Cy Young awards, Rookie of the Year awards. Then we get to the 1960s. In the 1960s, for that decade of the 60s, arguably the three greatest players in Major League Baseball were Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Frank Robinson, and maybe throwing the Bob Gibson in there or Roberto Clemente. Point is, none of them were white. Then the 70s, I told you about the Big Red Machine, yeah, being a basically the big black machine. The 1971 All-Star Game, you had two black pitchers starting, which seems unheard of today, starting that All-Star Game. The most valuable player of that All-Star Game was Frank Robinson, an African-American. The most outstanding player was Reggie Jackson, who hit the light tower in Detroit at that Tiger Stadium. And then at one point in the mid-70s, you had the Pittsburgh Pirates doing something that had not been done before or since, fielding an all-black team. So what that just tells you, what Hank was pointing out in others, but particularly Hank, that African-Americans were becoming extremely dominant, extremely good, and again, it was attracting more and more blacks to play baseball, like myself and my brothers and what have you. And once that started to go down to where we are now, it was a bad thing. And one thing I must add, too, that got Hank and I close together, back in 1982, when I did that series on blacks in baseball before I called Hank, I was tipped off by a white scout, white Major League scout, who gave me a scouting report, Major League Baseball scouting report, computerized, that had race on the scouting report. And the NFL didn't have it. NBA didn't have it. When I called then Commissioner of Baseball, Bowie Kuhn, about it, first he denied it. And then when I faxed it to him, all heck broke loose. And he sent a memo to all the 26 major league teams at the time to stop the practice. Some of them did, but many of them didn't.
Well, Hank and Aaron died in January 2021. You were asked by his widow to be a pallbearer at his funeral. What was that experience like for you?
Well, I actually was honorary pallbearer, and it was, and this was right in the middle of COVID. So they didn't have any of us there, any of the honorary pallbearers, and actually none of the pallbearers. And it was only like, no more than maybe about 50 people or so allowed at the funeral because of the COVID restrictions of the church and what have you. But just the fact that Billy Aaron, that's Hank's widow, called me to be an honorary pallbearer was overwhelming. And I remember my first response was, why me? And I almost wanted to say, surely you can find somebody else. And then I started thinking about it, and if I may so arrogantly say so, I was like, why not me? It made perfect sense, given the journey that Hank and I had through the decades. I mean, it was just an incredible journey where we were just, a perfect fit, because he was just like a member of my family all the way through. And this brings me to one of the first conversations, well, the first conversation we had, give an example, Shireen, of what I'm talking about. After the first conversation, I was going through my notes, and I do this not only with Hank Aaron, but with everybody. If there's something I don't understand, I will call somebody back. And Hank, being from Mobile, Alabama, and he's got a kind of a special speaking style, and he kind of speaks like some of my, uncles and the other family members. Like, even though I grew up in South Bend, during the time of the Great Migration, my mom's side of the family came from Cotton Plant, Mississippi. Can't get more southern than that. And my dad's side of the family came from Dell, Arkansas. So he spoke like a lot of my relatives. So I remember I called him back and I said, Hank, I just want to make sure that I'm putting you in context here with something you said. And Hank was so impressed with that. He said that in all of his years, he said, I'm the only person, reporter, who had ever called him to make sure I was getting it right. And it was little things like that brought us even closer.
We are talking about Hank Aaron with his confidant and biographer, Terrence Moore. This is a fascinating discussion. We've got about a minute left together, and I just want to know, what do you want people to know about Hank Aaron's legacy, what he meant to you?
Well, quite simply, he was more than 755 home runs. He was an everyman. I mean, he was a guy that he was funny, he was humorous. You'll find this in the book. He cared about humanity, and he really, really cared about the state of Black America and youth. He was really huge with youth. And he was a guy that, again, who just also loved baseball, needless to say, to the point that even in his latter years, he was so proud of the fact that he would call me one day and say, hey, Terrence, you know what? I've started to watch baseball on my computer. Just imagine this 80-year-old man doing that. So he was all things and so well-rounded in many ways. But the final thing I would say about Hank Aaron would be the guy next door. He would be the guy you want as your neighbor. That if you had a flat tire in your driveway, and you had kids, he would tell you to go in the house. I'll take care of this.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing these memories. I so appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you.
Terrence Moore, the author of The Real Hank Aaron, an intimate look at the life and legacy of the home run king, sports reporter and columnist for more than 40 years. I'm Shireen Seewert. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.